Ready to go. Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Greg Coffin. I'm the chairman of the community's Water and Light Advisory Board. I'm going to call this meeting to order. This is a special meeting, our annual public input meeting. I will start out with the introductions of the board members. I'll start out. My name is Greg Coffin, chairman of the board. And I've been a citizen for 37 years in this community and have a long background in utility is my work. So I'll go ahead, David.
David Switzer. I've been a member of the board for, I think, 3 years now. I'm a faculty at the University of Missouri in public affairs, and I study water utilities as my area of research. So a lot of time in utilities, and I've been here for 6 years in the community.
Tom?
I'm Tom Jensen. I'm in my fifth year on the board. I'm an attorney, and I'm part of my practice is focused on the syndication of tax credits, which monetizes public subsidies, including subsidies that support clean energy.
Philip Frasica. I've been on the board for 2 years now. My background is with Renew Missouri, primarily in advocating for utility policy across the state of Missouri, and really happy to be here. Thanks.
Amanda.
Amanda Jacobs, and I'm finishing my first year on the board, and I am a residential property manager representing approximately 50 different private property owners in Columbia and our surrounding communities, all residential management.
Thank you. Our agenda this evening, we've got several informational and presentational information to share, and then we do have a time for public input. We want to hear from you if you'd like to share with us. So this evening, we're going to start with a Water and Light and Advisory Board overview, really our purpose and authority. We have a presentation on the new community solar program. We have some information related to a meeting we're going to have tomorrow on the utility rate affordability metrics. We're going to talk a little bit about energy efficiency and demand reductions, both from the federal and local opportunities that community members can participate in. We'll also share other public input opportunities if you can't participate in a meeting this evening. So we'll start with approval of this agenda. Is there any additional changes or additions to it? Do I have a motion to approve the agenda? Tom?
So moved.
First. Any second? Amanda seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we'll start with the Water and Light Advisory Board overview. I don't know if you're familiar with the board. It's a group of five citizen volunteers. We're selected by the city council for terms up to 4 years. They can be renewed if you apply again. And basically it's kind of an overview of the community with varying backgrounds and expertise to hopefully advise and recommend and support the utility operations for the water and light. We meet monthly, second Wednesdays of each month at 8 a.m. And we also hold additional special meetings such as this if the topics or interests deserve an additional meeting. Our general role is to review and advise on the utility operations, financials, long-range planning, capital and infrastructure needs, compliance, and conformance with industry standards and regulations. Our authority is in advisory only. We don't make decisions for the water and light operation. Those are borne by the director of the water and light, the city manager, and the city council. We do advise and provide recommendations, but ultimately the decisions on how the utility should be operated are borne within that decision authority. Okay, next topic is the community solar program. Brandon.
Good evening. I'm Brandon Renaud, Utility Services Manager, Utility Services Division. Happy to be here this evening. Community solar has been a topic around Columbia for a number of years. Excuse me. We had our first iteration of it a number of years ago with the Solar One program. If anyone's familiar with that, it was a very small program simply designed to advocate for and promote the use of solar energy. The participants of that program subscribed to those solar fields, did not receive any credits back. It was simply to promote the use of renewables throughout Columbia. It was successful and it was subscribed. At a certain point, the sunset of that program led to us seeking the next iteration. We really wanted to design a true community solar. We started that process a number of years ago. Prior to COVID, we started working with our software developer. One of the early initiatives that we started working on was the billing software necessary to offer a true net billing setup for community solar for the City of Columbia. A lot of work has been done to date between staff, our software developer. We think we've really designed a program that fits the needs of Columbia, as well as the requests that have been made and the feedback that we've seen from the community. Our goal with community solar has always been to replicate as close as possible a real-world distributed solar setup so that a customer participating in our community solar program would see similar effects on their bills that they would have in our community solar program if they had solar installed on their roof at their home. What that ended up resulting in is a net billing type of setup where we would have solar fields installed across Columbia. In our case, we have a solar site located on Bernadette Drive. We also have the Truman Solar Field located east of town. What we will be doing is taking a portion of each of these fields to total approximately a 1 megawatt community solar design. That'll result in about 75 kilowatts from Bernadette and 925 approximately kilowatts from Truman Solar. Doing this format ensures that if our initial program is successful, we could easily replicate and expand the program if that's the community's desire. The way that this would work would be that customers would subscribe to 1.5 kilowatt blocks. They would subscribe to one block of solar, and the production from that block or that section of solar would be available as a credit for the production on a customer's monthly utility bill. When looking at the community solar program, one of the primary focuses for us, it was really important to ensure that this program was self-contained. There'll be a limited number of customers that could participate in the community solar program, and we wanted to ensure that those customers alone were paying for it. This really reduces the potential that there would be any subsidy from customers who could not participate in the community solar program. If someone cannot participate in the program, it seemed logical to us that someone would not have to pay for it if they could not participate in it, based on there being a limited number of blocks to be able to subscribe to. So it'll be a residential focused program available to all customers that are on a residential rate, whether they own their home or rent a property. We have a lot of rental properties in town. As much as 50% of the housing in Columbia is rental housing. And one of the focuses that we had was to ensure that a customer who was temporarily living in a space or who was moving across town or who might move three or four times in different rental properties over a number of years could subscribe to a program like this, and they could continue to participate regardless of where their location is in town. As long as they were a customer of Columbia Water and Light, they could participate and continue to participate in the community solar program. We designed this to be a 20-year automatically renewing subscription. Some of the early feedback that we received is that we wanted the community wanted there to be protections for customers to ensure that they were not locked into something or there was not an additional fee for them to get out of a program. So the way it would work would be a 20-year automatically renewing agreement that a customer would sign. If a customer does not opt out of the program, they would automatically be opted back into the program. They could opt out at any time if they simply desire to, or if they're leaving town or moving, they could opt out at no additional cost to leave that program, at which point that subscription would be opened up to a new participant for that same slot. What does it all mean for a customer is that they would see a monthly subscription fee added to their utility bill of $24.77 per month. That fee would be made up of two items. It would be a solar subscription fee totaling $14 and a utility operations fee totaling $10.77. The solar subscription fee will actually be locked in for the life of the agreement. This is made up of fixed cost, the power purchase agreement, the cost to build out the solar field, the cost that will not change over time. The utility operations fee will be a variable cost. Cost included there will be staffing, marketing, distribution costs for electricity on the grid. As cost, we will be tracking these costs over time, and if the costs go up and rate increases are necessary, we would raise that cost at the same time. Credit side, on the value side for the customer, the credits would be paid out, or they wouldn't be paid out, they would be, the credits would be have a value at the lowest tier of our electric rate. So right now that rate is 0.0889 cents per kilowatt hour. As that rate increases over time for customers, the value would increase over time as well. So costs can go up, but also the value for those customers can go up in hand. There's a one-time application fee that's $27, and that helps to cover some of the costs to set suit for the application for the initial design of the software. This helps to ensure that there's, again, no cross-subsidy between participants and non-participants in the community solar program. This chart shows what participation in community solar will look like on an average year, what the expectations are. The red line across the center is the cost for a customer to participate, again, $24.77. The green bars represent the average production. A customer will expect to see a credit on their monthly utility bill for 5 to 7 months out of the year. They would expect to have a small fee on their bill for maybe five or six months a year, depending on production, how much the sun shines changes every year, whether someone would have solar on their home or through this program, they would see the same impacts, greater production in the summer months and lower production in the winter months. We expect to see from each kilowatt and a half subscription block a production of 3,280 kilowatt hours per year. Again, that the value of that will be at the lowest tier of our electric rate. What it all comes out to is a monthly average of about a small premium of about 42 cents per month for a participating customer. Again, the point of this program, the real design that we wanted is we wanted to be able to allow access to a real world setup for community solar that allowed our customers to have the same experience, whether they're in community solar or they had a rooftop solar system. Including renters in this setup was really important for us. Just recognizing the type of housing available in the community, making sure that everyone has access to this type of program and that we can duplicate it and expand access as we see fit or as the program grows over time.
Brandon, I have a couple questions. One is, the council has had first read on this proposed ordinance, and they'll actually vote on it at the next meeting. Is that next
Monday, correct?
Next Monday. And if it's approved, how long would it take before people could start signing up for this program?
We'd be taking applications shortly thereafter with the design of launching the program in January of 2024.
Anybody else have any questions?
How many blocks are available?
Approximately 650.
If it's popular, do you think they will be able to expand the program?
And that's why we took a small portion of the Bernadette field. For the two reasons, we used a small portion of the Bernadette field. We really wanted the portion of the community solar program to be right in the center of the community, something that we could point to, people drive past every single day. The solar farm out east of town is kind of hard to see. You drive past on the highway and you kind of look over your shoulder at it, but that Bernadette field, most people know where it is, they recognize it. It seemed like an important tie-in for the community. At the same time, using a small portion of the Bernadette field allowed us to replicate, expanding this to easily three times its size without making any significant changes to the design of the program.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you.
I just want to pass on, and we're going to save all comments towards the end from the public. So if you do, Brandon will still be here. So if there's any questions related to that program, you'll be able to ask those questions then. Utility rate affordability metrics. We're very fortunate to have David Switzer as part of our team. He's got a lot of expertise in this area and has encouraged us to look into this over the past year, and really looking forward to going forward with this and being a very progressive community and having this technology, not technology, but methodology, in order to evaluate our rate structures to make sure they're affordable for our community. So David, you want to talk about that project?
Yeah, so this is something we've been talking about for about a year now, even prior to the recent rate changes. And so we've really been kind of talking about it for a while, and we want to kind of get moving on it. In part, we wanted to get moving on it earlier, but the cost of service study and bunch of other stuff, including, jobs and the fact that we are a volunteer board and only have so much time, has kind of slowed that down a little bit. But tomorrow we are having a meeting. We're going to discuss the development of metrics and thinking about different ways of measuring affordability. And so there have been studies out of different cities, different states, the city of Austin, city of Phoenix, city of Chicago, Ohio, California have all done affordability studies that kind of look at different ways of measuring it, different ways of conceptualizing it. Primarily, these have been focused on water. So one thing we're going to try and think about is if it's extendable to electricity. So we're going to go over the different ways that affordability has been conceptualized and the different ways of measuring it, think about the best fits for our community. Tomorrow is really kind of the first big step in this, thinking about setting priorities. What do we want to do in accomplishing this? And then looking into kind of what is the use of affordability metrics for the purpose of eventually incorporation into policy processes, such as future rate setting. I'm not gonna go too much into what we have planned for tomorrow, other than to say, it's really kind of the first step. And so if you have interest, if you have comments, if you have thoughts, we'd love to have you there. But there's also, as we'll talk about at the end, other opportunities for feedback. I will note that unfortunately the speaker that we had lined up emailed me before this meeting and has expressed that they are not going to be able to make it. We hope to be able to bring them back at another time. But we are still planning on having our meeting tomorrow and discussing some important questions related to affordability. And so again, thinking about developing this metric or these metrics, thinking about how they can be used for policy moving forward, and kind of taking a proactive approach to affordability measurement and use in policy. And so that's really...
Yeah, so the way I understand it is we're trying to achieve a set of tools or a tool methodology for the community, the utility, in order to evaluate their rates as part of that cost of services and rate evaluation.
Yeah, and essentially a systematic way, right? And that kind of is broadly comparable, that is based on metrics that are used nationwide, that are a systematic way of evaluating utility rates. That's a tool fundamentally for staff, for the community, for members of council to better understand what the cost burden of utility rates actually is on the community.
Good. That meeting, if you're interested in attending, is in 4A and B tomorrow at between 1 and roughly 4. So we're starting at 1 o'clock. I don't know if without the presentation it'll last that long. David? Oh, it's 1A, not 4A. 1A and B. Thank you. My mistake. Energy efficiency and demand reduction have been a big priority for, I know, this board for the time that I've been on it. And we're fortunate to have Tom Jensen, who's got some background with the IRA federal programs that are recently introduced. And also Brandon's going to share a little bit more information about the community programs as well. We have a great community program in Columbia, and there's opportunity for members and community members to take advantage of that, but also things on the federal level. So we'll start with Tom on the federal level activities.
Yeah. So last year at this same meeting, which was Amanda's very first, so this is the actual anniversary, I think, of your first year on the board. I talked about the IRA and mostly within the context of what kinds of programmatic wide things that can impact a utility consumption or utility improvements that can be obtained at a discount or just clean energy in general from large scale solar and wind. But this year I thought I would talk about some of the things that are available for individuals because a lot of people I think aren't really necessarily aware of what's available through the IRA for homeowners and without something going wrong with an appliance or something in their house, and then they're suddenly hearing from the local salesperson what their options are. And I can attest, so this is a quick anecdote, had a hot water heater problem recently. I changed the thermal couple, which is already way outside of my realm of expertise. I'm the opposite of a handyman. I was pretty proud that I extended the life of my water heater, and I talked about it for about a month. I'm sure some people in this room heard about it. And then and then it really broke. So I extended the life of the thing until the can started leaking water everywhere, which was a big mistake. I probably should have taken the signal and then looked at some options. So you don't have to wait until something craps out at your house to check out some options, and we've summarized some of the discounts that are available. So without further ado, next slide, please. There's obviously a lot. The types of things that are available come with some conditions. The IRA overall has a 30% cap of costs available in tax credits. That applies to the giant solar fields. It applies to some of the things you put in your home. And then, but some things are better. Some replacement items are better and more not necessarily more energy efficient, but cleaner energy efficient. And so they're going to be a little bit cheaper in terms of the cost cap. So the items you see here that we'll see, like ductless heat pump. Okay, ductless heat pump systems, 30% of cost up to $2,000. That's something that is going to be super energy efficient. The idea of the AC only 30% of cost up to $600. Up to $600 means that it's not necessarily as efficient. So you'll see a wide range, and this obviously won't take very long. Could we try the next slide? ceiling. So you fixed the slides, I think. Some of the stuff was missing. you'll see that going just throughout your house, almost anything you can imagine affecting your house is going. You're going to get some steep discounts. Geothermal, of course, comes with the biggest discount, which is 30% of cost. Period. There's no cap on that. Next slide. Windows, doors, skylights, tankless water heaters, solar water heaters, normal water heaters. I think I qualify for 30% up to $600 on the one that I had to buy to replace my big leaking one. Electric panel upgrades, biomass stove, boilers. We start to get into some items that are a little bit more creative and a little more technology driven, and where the tax credit comes in at $2,000. And then please, the next slide. then we get to some doors and energy audits. But it's also, this is where I add the note that Brandon's going to talk a little bit more about some additional programs, which are kind of layer on top of the savings that are available for some of these items listed here. And now we'll go to the big ticket items on the next slide. Battery storage, fuel cells, small wind turbines, and solar energy systems. These have different the prior slides noticed at the top that they said this is available from now until 2032. The availability of this diminishes in terms of the percentage that's available, but does extend all the way out to 2035. These are things that you can get for your home. And next slide. I think that's, yeah, okay, yeah, so that was it. one of the some of the glaring issues with the IRA, and that'll become apparent tomorrow when we talk about rate affordability. All these things are available to homeowners. There's not a special incentive program for owners of rental properties. There are some incentives that are available that where Treasury is still defining what the criteria is to qualify. So even though the IRA was passed a year ago, regulations that are going to govern how these subsidies are available and applied are just now being issued in a lot of cases. In one case, that'll help the utility itself monetize tax credits in case the utility wants to engage in some installation of otherwise tax credit eligible equipment like solar panels. But whereas before they weren't eligible to try to monetize those. But so we have some challenges because a lot of the biggest, the most inefficient, the least efficient housing in town tends to be low income rental housing. And landlords are not necessarily incentivized to make all these new additions without passing costs or make improvements without passing some costs on to their tenants, which diminishes the chance of it being fairly low income housing. And I know that we've talked a lot about a lot of different policy ideas that hopefully we can come up with so that these kinds of subsidies are, today it's just about homeowners, but we also have to address tenants of all kinds of housing, including low-income tenancies. That unfortunately is not going to be in today's presentation, and that's another issue we'll have to tackle as a community down the road. But that's it.
Tom, to clarify, these are tax credits.
These are tax credits, which. Sorry, go ahead.
Timing, you do this, you want to kind of make sure you're gonna pay the full cost, and then eventually when you file your taxes in the following year, you should be able to get that credit back on those taxes. So timing is pretty important when you do that work. But there is a lot of good opportunities. I know I'm going to try to take advantage of some of it. I was surprised at talking to an HVAC contractor. They're already aware of what you need. Like if you want a heat pump that meets the criteria, they already know what level of efficiency you need. So they're a good resource as well.
That's exactly right.
As you're looking into making some of these improvements, the contractors and in the community.
We had a public meeting, I think, right before the pandemic. Tony Rigdon from Chapman was here talking about smart water heaters. And those contractors who can help replace these kinds of items in your home will help you walk through all your options. They're all familiar with all the subsidies available because it helps them sell more products. It's also important to remember that there's a caveat that I didn't get into because there's a lot of nuance in how it's applied. There are caps, there are overall caps that you can only collect this many tax credits. If you want to install 10 different things, chances are you won't be able to. There are going to be some caps in terms of the total value. That's for you to study. You can look it up in energystar.gov. Gives you all the input you need to develop those strategies. And if you do these installations and you are able to achieve other tax benefits that can help diminish your tax liability in a particular tax year that applies to these installations, and you aren't able to apply the tax credits can be carried forward. But of course, the longer you carry them forward in terms of the time value of money and financial modeling, they diminish in value. Throwing that out there. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to add really quickly, there's also going to be a home energy rebate program. The Missouri Office of Department of Natural Resources has applied for this money out of the IRA, so that will be available sometime in 2024, and it will cover a lot of the tax credit types of projects and upgrades that we talked about today, and they could also be coupled with what we're going to hear about from the city as well.
And if I understand correctly, the IRA does have grant opportunities for public entities. Is that your understanding as well, Tom?
I think there's a lot of grant opportunities in the IIJA, the Infrastructure Jobs Act, that was okay from the prior administration. But something that's very important that is in the IRA that can affect utilities like just like Columbia Water and Light is normally you have to have tax liability to get derive benefit from tax credits. And of course, this is the city's tax exempt. So the city would always need to buy clean energy from other sources and then theoretically enjoy the benefit of a reduced cost for that clean energy, because for the maker of that or for the developer of that clean energy system, they would have gotten their own discounts by having discounted tax credits, which they can sell in the market and reduce their costs by reducing debt and increasing equity. So, but then there was a lot of clamoring for, in this bill, to be able to let tax-exempt entities like this just cash in the tax credits directly to the Treasury and get a payment. Now, there are some downsides to that, because then they're not able to enjoy the additional financial benefit of the depreciation losses, which have value. So the debt is still a little higher for any kind of municipal thing going down that path. But that is meaningful, and that means that the city can start to consider some things locally within the city footprint. Unfortunately, there are a lot of space limitations, because to really move the needle on clean energy, you have to have massive acreages with, you know, lots of megawatts. And we're, of course, space limited, but we hopefully can start thinking about doing more programs like community solar, or when this community solar program is built, qualifying for the tax credit, submitting it to Treasury for the 30% discount.
And so a lot of opportunity, a lot to learn yet.
Yeah.
And this board is definitely focused on that over the coming year. Brandon, you want to share a little bit about the city's programs? We know we've got great programs, and there's a lot of users on the system, and there's more opportunity, I'm sure.
Before I start, Tom, your story about your water heater is well heard. I had a similar experience with a dryer and repaired it, only to have it break down. So the mantra of repair before replace, but recognize early the need to replace.
Right.
We see a lot of that in our programs. It's customers that they wait, we get another year out of that air conditioner, get another year out of that water heater, and eventually it's 100 degrees outside and they need it today. And a lot of our programs are not designed for, they're not designed for replacing an emergency. We try to get out into the community, we try to educate customers about energy efficiency replacements and doing so before you are in some type of emergency. We've been offering energy efficiency programs since about the 1970s. We have a very long and proud history of energy efficiency in Columbia. A lot of that comes from the community's support that we've seen. We always hear that the community likes it. We are believers that the lowest cost watt of electricity is the one that you do not have to produce. So if you install more energy efficient systems, you do not have to purchase or produce that watt of energy. Everyone's a winner, because we can keep that cost lower. We started our programs that we are currently operating around 2008. Before that, there was a process called the Integrated Electric Resource Plan going on. From that plan, we looked at energy efficiency as a resource and how we could benefit Columbia. And we saw from that a whole suite of programs that would be beneficial for the community to implement, from residential to commercial to industrial type of efficiency programs that would keep costs down for our customers and therefore keep costs down for the utility. What we did at that time is we put together a long-range projection of how much energy we thought we could save, or how much peak energy we could save, which essentially means during the hottest time of the year, during the hottest summer day or hottest summer afternoon, how much electricity would we need in any instantaneous given time. We had a goal of reducing our electric load by just over 11 megawatts. Happy to report that between the time that we started these programs and just last year, we actually surpassed that. Instead of saving over about 11.5 megawatts, we saved just over 13 megawatts. That benefit pays dividends again and again, as the utility does not have to buy more and more peak power off the grid each year. So we invest in energy efficiency early, and the community sees that benefit for years and years to come. There are a couple of people in the audience here I want to introduce. Todd McVicker, raise your hand, Todd, and Ben Eads. These are supervisors that oversee our residential and commercial energy efficiency programs. So they're out there in the community working with customers, helping customers to better understand their options for energy efficiency, or working with the local businesses, helping businesses to decide what's the best investment for them so that they can keep their costs down and keep their businesses going. I speak at these meetings quite regularly, and I think the board might be tired of hearing me give the same old spiel, so I'm going to ask Todd and Ben to participate tonight, kind of take up the presentation a little bit and give them a chance to talk about their programs, since they're the ones that run them on a daily basis, are involved with their customers and the contractors in the field. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Todd, and then Ben's going to come up to speak just after that.
The City of Columbia Utilities offers a number of efficiency programs for residential electric customers. Home Performance with Energy Star is our program that takes a whole house approach to energy conservation. With that, an approved contractor comes to your home and performs a comprehensive energy audit to determine what energy efficiency upgrades would be beneficial to the home. After the customer makes their selection of what measures they want to install and makes those upgrades, a post-inspection is performed and the customer receives a rebate from the utility for the upgrades. Rebates are up to $1,200 are available for the Home Performance with Energy Star program. Additionally, participants are able to, if they choose, use our Home Performance Loan program, which offers up to $15,000 in loans for participation for the energy efficiency upgrades with rates as low as 1% interest. The utility also provides rebates for the replacement of existing air conditioners and heat pumps with energy efficient replacements. These rebates vary based upon the size and the efficiency of the system, with rebates being available for up to $1,600. And then starting last year, the utility has rebates for $500 for the installation of level 2 electric vehicle chargers. The rebate is available in new and existing homes. Additionally, if a new construction home does not install an EV charger, but is made EV ready by installing a 240 volt outlet in the garage, they can receive $100. Next slide, please. The City of Columbia Utilities also offers a free residential energy assessment to all electric and water customers upon their request. For this program, a city staff member will come out to a home and perform an energy assessment and provide specific tips on easy, low-cost, do-it-yourself projects for energy and water conservation specifically made for that property, along with providing additional information for the more comprehensive programs that the utility offers. The city also has a number of income-eligible programs that we participate with. Our enhanced home performance program is like Home Performance with Energy Star, except it offers a higher level of rebate of up to $2,400 instead of $1,200. We also partner with Central Missouri Community Action to help fund their weatherization assistance program. This program is run by Central Missouri Community Action, where they will come out and perform whole house energy efficiency upgrades to eligible customers at no cost to the customer. From there, also, the utility partners with a voluntary action center during the summer months for the window air conditioner exchange program. This program, at no cost to the customer, replaces ineligible customers' old inefficient window air conditioner units with new efficient units. And from here, I'll pass it off to Ben.
Right, I'm gonna focus more on the commercial industrial side. And so from that, of all the counts we have in our territory, about 14.5% are commercial industrial customers. And from those megawatts that they require every month and the megawatt hours they consume, these programs are more tailored towards what load can we remove and how can we incentivize it. There's usually a lot of constraints to this. What threshold for inconvenience is the customer willing to take for construction or maybe capital costs that they just can't cover? And so hopefully some of these incentives will help push them in that direction. One of our highest participation programs is commercial lighting. And that's basically just looking for a reduction in kilowatts for the new LED lights they put in. And that's pretty much how it's been going, and it's been going pretty well, stood the test of time. But a lot of people have already adopted that, so there's less people participating, so we're trying to get a little more creative and trying to move that in different directions. But it's how it is now, and we're going to keep it that way going forward until we try to revamp some of our programs. But that's not on the conversation for tonight, but we're excited about it. Another one of our programs is AC and heat pump rebate, and that rebate is based on just a table of tonnage and efficiencies, and that's how we base that rebate for customers. Ground source heat pumps at $300 per ton. So pretty straightforward. Next slide, please. A third program, motors and drives. We've got a lot of industrial customers, a lot of motors in our territory. A lot of them are getting very old. And unfortunately, when it's time to replace them, they don't have the time to go through us or are not aware of our programs. But it's a way to incentivize putting in a more efficient motor when you have the opportunity. And also controls is an easy way to save money for our customers. Just reduces and makes that motor more efficient just by putting a smarter VFD. And then the last program is there to kind of catch all other sets of efficiencies that don't get covered by AC or lighting or motors. And so if it's something we can measure, we're happy to come out and take a look and work with customers to try to find a way to incentivize their efforts to improve their efficiency. Thank you.
So a few other programs that we have that are not as much based on demand reduction from the electric side is we do have a solar program that the city offers for to help promote and incentivize the installation of solar on individuals' homes and businesses. The rebates vary based upon the size of the system and what direction the system faces. For example, so the rebates, it's hard to give an exact number what that would be for every single project, but last year, the average residential property received a rebate of approximately $4,000 for the installation of solar on their house. Along with that, this utility also offers a couple of different programs for water conservation, one of those being a conservation program for the installation and replacement of low-flow water-sense toilets for both commercial and residential properties. Along with that, the city also has programs for irrigation upgrades to make existing irrigation systems more efficient, and also to help in the installation of with the installation of new efficient irrigation systems. Next slide, please. So then in 2021, we're gonna talk kind of about the future of our programming. In 2021, a community member-led task force completed an integrated electric resource and master plan. This plan outlined many things for the future of the utility, including efficiency programming. Utility staff are in the process of evaluating new and existing programs to offer an updated suite of programs for our customers. Once this process has been completed, we'll begin communicating updates on the new suite of programming. And last slide, if anyone has any questions, we do have ColumbiaPowerPartners.com that has a lot of the information. We have flyers and cards in the back with information. Also, please feel free to call the number that's on the page right there, or feel free to catch Ben, Brandon, or myself after this series of presentations done. We'd be more than happy to answer any questions we can for you.
I have a question or two. What is, for the industrial and commercial customers, do you assist them in their calculations on return on investment so they can see how they can monetize that investment?
Yes, we do.
I'm sure that happens a little bit on the residential, but definitely on the commercial and industrial, because they're not going to invest money unless they know they're going to see a savings. That's good. And the other thing, I think, the three of you, I think the question I would have is really, where's the biggest opportunity that you see for your programs going forward? Obviously, there's been great success, but you know, success is a milestone, and then you want to seek more. So where do you see the program kind of headed that there's lots of opportunity?
One of the things that we're trying to do is kind of try to help with blending some of the existing residential programs, revamping those, and looking at new ones that'll kind of align with some of the IRA funds that are coming out, so that we can use those to hopefully the customer will be able to take advantage of our rebates, along with also getting the associated, I guess, incentives from the state of Missouri whenever they actually go through that process and the money becomes available. Other things are looking at redoing the evaluation and EM&V of our programs to determine if looking at not just demand savings, but also kilowatt hour reductions, finding that that's actually has a large play into as well for the cost of the utility. From there, then looking at that, and then basically looking at all variety of things from upgrading different HVAC systems to, I know we're looking at some other commercial programs that are out there that are a little bit outside of what we have been doing, residential as well, kind of trying to make it easier for the customers, not just also what's going to get us the most savings, but also is going to get the most participants from the customers, because the combination of large participant numbers and energy savings, that's how we're going to make the difference on that.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Great information. I think that this community does have great programs, and not only does it save costs for the customers, it reduces the investments that the utility needs to make over time in infrastructure, and also reduces emissions. Whichever emissions you want to look at, it all reduces emissions, and it's really kind of the first choice we should be making as a community to improve is to do efficiency, because that's where you get your best bang for the buck. Public input. So in addition to this annual meeting, which is, you know, doesn't come here that often, just once a year, we do hold regular meetings, as indicated, 8 o'clock on the second Wednesday of the month, and anybody's welcome to attend and provide comment towards the end of the meeting. We also established a email. It's walbpublic@comeau.gov. If you send an email to that, you won't get an immediate response, but we'll review those emails. We may ask questions and we may give you a response. It depends on the questions or the comments that you may have, but we will look at every email that's submitted to us and discuss it during one of our meetings, depending on the timing. It's like if it comes right before a meeting, it's not in our agenda pack, but if it gets there in time, we'll definitely include it in the agenda and discuss it and take it under consideration. So those are a couple opportunities that you can have throughout the year to provide public input to this board. We'll get into the general comments period now. We ask that you, first of all, state your name if you're going to share a comment with us, and also try to keep your comments to 3 minutes. We will use the timer. If you need additional time, please let us know. There's not a lot of potential people sharing tonight just based on the attendance. So, again, try to keep 3 minutes and state your name for the recorder for the minutes today. Anybody interested?
Mark Hyam, Director of Mid-Missouri Peace Works. I'm speaking on behalf of the organization tonight. I want to first salute you for devoting your time as volunteers to serve what you see as the community interest. And I realize it's a lot of extra time. And I have to get here at 8 a.m. I've started coming to those meetings lately, and it's time-consuming. All that said, I get the sense that we're in a handbasket, and nobody's even noticing we're in the basket, let alone wondering where we're going. We're in a crisis, a climate emergency, and it seems like what Water and Light is doing and what the board is doing is business as usual to a large extent. I very, very rarely even hear the word climate change, the words climate change mentioned. I haven't heard it tonight. And you know, it's something. We are in a situation where we need to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 50% this decade if we're to hope to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. That's the scientific consensus, but it seems like people are blissfully unaware of that. I believe that Columbia, over the past 6 years, has succeeded in reducing our greenhouse gas emissions by a very mighty 3%. And if you continue at that rate for the community, 3% over 6 years, to get to 50% is going to take decades, not the remainder of this decade. So I'd like to really urge you to have a sense of urgency around this very critical matter. The easiest way for us to reduce our greenhouse gas footprint for the community at large is to go to 100% renewable energy in our electric realm. And yet, I don't see any real excitement about that. I don't see any enthusiasm. We need to take this seriously, and we need to create incentives You know, we recently had a rate hike that made things less, not more, of an incentive for reducing usage. People like me, who are small users, I use on the average month less than 100 kilowatt hours at my home. And I got my bill the other day. For the electric component, it was more than $30 for my measly 80 kilowatt hours. You can figure it out, but if I'm looking at that as how much it's costing my kilowatt hours, it comes out more than 30 cents a kilowatt hour. I know that some of that's a demand charge as opposed to, you know, charge for the kilowatt hours, and there's a pilot in there and all that stuff. But the bottom line is, people who are small users are not being incentivized. My time's up, my 3 minutes is up, but I, again, salute you. I hope you'll just take the crisis we're in seriously, and let's make a difference together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Hi, Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. I took some notes. One of the things I wanted to focus on was the energy efficiency program. I wrote the ordinance that changed the rates on the interest because at the time we were charging almost nothing for interest, and we were paying quite a bit more for our bonds. So I suggested we change the interest rates. At that time, I wasn't looking at energy efficiency. I was looking at the impact on the utility as a whole financially. And if you want to encourage efficiency and help the community, help with climate change, you need to really do something significant. And I don't believe we should be paying rebates or giving loans for HVAC systems that barely surpass the standards. So we need to up that a little bit and just don't give rebates or loans to HVAC systems, whatever kind, that are, you know, maybe 3 SEER bigger or higher than the minimum federal standard. I also think that we should change the interest rates so that the interest rate declines as for HVAC systems. Set a standard for non-HVAC loans at whatever percentage, since interest rates are higher now, it could be a little higher than they are, maybe set the 5% for 10 years. But for everything else that has an HVAC system, start at that level and go down to zero if you have a very high efficiency. And you can easily buy systems that are over 20 SEER. So if you get, I mean, and the staff can look at that and determine what is the level where it should be 0%. And then that would also incentivize probably rental property owners because a number of years ago when I was more aware of this, something like 24% of the participants in the home performance program were property owners. If you give them something that is beneficial, they will take it. So I would hope that you would look at that. I am a little bit concerned that you're encouraging EV chargers without having AMI in place. It doesn't make sense to me. I have a plug-in hybrid. I borrowed a piece of equipment so I could see what's my charge just on a normal system. It was like 1.3 kW. Well, the 240 ones that you're talking about, the standard ones off the web that you can look up are 9 or 10 kW. And if a bunch of my neighbors put those in and we all plug our cars in at the same time, we're probably going to have a problem. And that's the kind of issue, until we have AMI, I think you need to be concerned about. So I'm very concerned that you're giving, and I've also seen a bunch of Teslas plugged in on hot summer afternoon at Hy-Vee. So you can't control that without knowing what the demand is. And really, I would encourage that to stop until you have AMI. And I'm sorry I'm going over, but I made a couple of notes. Community solar doesn't add anything, unlike rooftop solar. And I'm a little bit confused of what's the point. because you're taking 10% of the solar field. Bernadette's pretty much nothing. I mean, it's a very small amount. And you're saying, I have a huge tree on the south side of my house, so I could do it. But really, what's the point? What am I getting out of it except paying the utility a few dollars and saying I'm buying solar, but I'm really not doing anything as far as the community as a whole is concerned?
You can wrap your comments up.
So I would encourage you, instead of community solar, you look at facilitating REC purchases. If people want to help the community be more renewable, let them buy RECs and facilitate that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I agree on your comment on the EVs, and we are looking into that. Actually, we're having some training to gain more knowledge on how to incentivize EV owners to charge at off-peak periods and not during the demand period. So it may be done maybe through a rate structure or some other methodology before AMI comes. We'll have to look into that. Any other comments this evening?
Jay Hashider, 1812 Cliff Drive. I have just one brief comment, and it has to do something along the lines of what Mark was talking about, which is climate change. What I had when I was on the board a couple of years ago had proposed is that the utility put on its bill how much carbon dioxide is emitted based on the usage from each customer. And everybody thought that was a decent idea, was going to look into it. And then recently I was at a forum at the library, and the mayor was giving a talk to the Sierra Club and brought up the same idea. And I should mention that this was even brought up back when the Climate Action Plan was being worked on. It was always going to be looked at, but it's never gone any further than that. I'm hoping at least maybe after this meeting tonight, somebody on the board could at least discuss that potential idea. I think it's a very simple way to bring into focus the amount of carbon dioxide that customers are emitting, and perhaps it would jog them in a very nudging type of way into doing something about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Any further public comments? If not, we'll move to comments from members. Any comments from the members?
I can reply, Jay. I remember your suggestion on that on the task force. I thought it was a good one. I think the way we left it, the solution to it will be hopefully the same kind of solution that Jim suggested on the EV charging, which was since we use different fuel sources throughout the day at different times, more than others, it's harder to track carbon until we have AMI, so that we can understand that. You know, if you're using a lot of energy overnight, perhaps with a charger, a lot of times it's a greater likelihood that that's wind power versus, you know, coal or natural gas. But that was a great idea then. It's still a great idea, and we'll absolutely push it forward.
I just want to speak to the community solar point. there was an intent to also have a low-income component to the system that has not been able to move forward. There are a few other ways that we could probably get to that point through other means of assistance. There is an opportunity through the Department of Energy to allow states to divert LIHEAP funds for low-income individuals to cover access to solar. Right now, Missouri isn't able to do that. That's something I'm doing separately and advocating for to try to get that change, so we would be able to do that at a future iteration of the program.
Any other comments? Any comments from staff this evening?
Okay, that concludes our general discussion. Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting? Tom, first?
Second.
Philip, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all for coming this evening. Again, you can input through the Water and Light email or come to one of our regular schedules.